Let's talk about the future of news.
I want you all to know that we are fighting the fake news.
The state of journalism today.
Telling both sides of a controversial story.
I think you must be unbiased.
It's honesty, fairness, truth.
That is our job. That is our job. That is our job. That is our job.
There we go. Welcome once again to the Arrow Man in Stockholm podcast. Not the usual studio because I'm out in the middle of the forest here doing a little bit of renovations and that kind of thing. I ran away, right? Sport got that bad over the last two or three weeks. I just had to run and hide in the forest. This week we've had Champions League semi-finals. I haven't watched a single minute of it. I think Manchester United beat Roma 5 or 6-2 last night. Kind of followed it online. Didn't watch a single minute of it. There's loads of telly. There's loads of internet here. That's how we're talking to. But I just couldn't bring myself to do it because over the last few weeks, after you know a lifetime, I'll be 50 years old this year, and I just had enough of the bullshit that goes on around it, right? And I fully accept that I'm part of that bullshit that goes on around it because that's what I do for a living. I write about it, but I do try to avoid some of these things. But it has sort of killed what was left of the fan in me. So this week I wanted to talk to somebody who's still very much a sports journalist and still very much a fan, still very much loves Manchester United, giving out about them in particular, you'll notice from his social feeds. Sean Sheehan from the Severe MMA and True Balls podcast, the pod god himself, as the emails start to pour in now from fans around the world. Sean, how have you been over the last few weeks with this Super League crack? How did you respond to the news of that to begin with?
I probably responded differently to everyone else because I'm like, I was thinking about this today. We've talked about soccer before a little bit, and I'm always very interested to get your take on it because you're very much from you like the League of Ireland. You were around, and I was born in 1988, so I know nothing but the Premier League. When did it start? 92 or something?
Yep.
So I was only a young lad coming up. I was thinking about that. I know some of my first memories of soccer, like Alan Shearer. The 15 million transfer, Figo signing for Real Madrid, Ronaldo, the Galacticos, and in Man United coming through, you know, signing Varane and all of this. So I've kind of been brought up with watching soccer and watching sport with the money in it. But it's funny, I'm going to do a bit of a Philip O'Connor story here, but a kind of a so when it comes to music, right, I'm a weirdo. I hear a song. Some people hear a song and they listen to it five times and go, oh, that's overplayed. I can't hear it anymore. I listen to a song 100 times, right? And it doesn't matter if it's a new song, an old song or whatever. So the song in the last couple of weeks I've been listening to over and over is American Pie by Don McLean, right? That's a beautiful song, a lovely song. I've liked it before, but I never really kind of fell in love with the song before. And my niece is she's a great musician, a great artist and everything. And she willfully takes my Spotify and uses it and saw that I was listening to this song. And she told me, did you know what that song is about? And I was like, no. So I went in and she told me about it. And I looked into it a bit and I was like, you know, the day the music died. Mm-hmm. It's about, you know, Buddy Holly and Bobby Valen, I think, and a couple more people died in the plane.
Richie Valens and the Big Bopper.
Richie Valen, sorry. Yeah. So Richie Valen, sorry, my Wikipedia is showing off, but it's about that. And then it's also about, I think Don McLean came out only a few years ago and said it's about the day the music died, but also like music and things like that have been changing and kind of dying over a longer period. And that to me reminded me of Gary Neville coming on the television. It was like, this is the day football died, you know, when the ESL came out. And I was thinking to myself when we were talking about, you know, on text and stuff like that, it's like, is this really the day football died? Or has football been dying as what people wanted to be, a purely sporting entity for decades? And thinking about it, there's absolutely no argument that it hasn't been dying for decades if you want it to die that way. Now, me personally, again, my opinion is irrelevant for a second, but like, if you look at the sport and where it's gone from Shearer, and people probably go to the first million-pound player or whatever it might be before that, Shearer to Figo, to the Brazilian Ronaldo, to Cristiano Ronaldo, to Neymar and Mbappe and Pogba and all of these players going for all of this money, even Harry Maguire and Virgil van Dijk and all of this. The sport has gone that way. We are already in it. We're already on that mountain, on the way up to the very top, and we're not coming back down. It's only getting worse. And this, to me, we can get into maybe the intricacies and what it would mean for us and everything like that. But to me, I'm like, is everyone like Gary Neville? And I'm a big fan of Gary Neville. I think he's absolutely fantastic at his job. But is everyone just do they have their head buried in the sand? Mm. Like, do they really have their head buried in the sand for what we are and what we're looking at as football fans? And me personally, I buy into that. You know, I'm not like you, and I kind of wish I was like you a little bit, who can like enjoy the League of Ireland and who wants it to be, you know, nothing but sport. Maybe even lads from Manchester playing, lads from Liverpool and all this. That would, and you know, people coming in as well, but that would be great. But I've bought into it. I want Man United to spend 200 million and buy Neymar, or not Neymar, Mbappe, or other players like that. So I bought into it. I was all for the Super League. I would way rather see Man United play Real Madrid than Burnley. I scrap the Premier League. I don't care. Like, I want to see better matches all the time. I'm one of these people. I'm a little bit older than their target audience now, unfortunately, but that would be my opinion. But that aside, and I know that's not realistic, and I know it hurts the teams and everything like that, and I can definitely understand where people are coming from. But the people who are saying those things, the backing behind it, and what they have done themselves, even like Gary Neville bringing Salford up 3 or 4 divisions and pumping money into it. Like, what's the difference between that and doing it with Man United and Real Madrid and making them so much better? Like, in their leagues, they were winning it by miles, coming up and then winning straight away again because of the money they put into it. Mm. So in the question you asked me, what was my first reaction to it? That was my first reaction to it. It was like, are you serious? Is this a serious reaction to this news? Like, I couldn't believe it. That was my first reaction to it, I suppose.
There's an awful lot to unpack of what you said there. And you're also the only honest man that I've spoken to. Because on the level you're talking there, Manchester United playing Real Madrid, I was writing last week that nobody wants to see Burnley. Nothing against Burnley. One of my best friends is a Burnley supporter and has been a season ticket holder all his life. But nobody wants to see them, you know, because that's what we're dealing with now. And one of the other reasons for wanting to talk to you is because of... you understand where sport and entertainment meet, right? So just before we came on there, I got the news that the draw for the World Cup, the Women's World Cup in New Zealand and Australia in 2023 was made. And I came up trumps because Sweden had been drawn against Ireland and Finland, which is perfect.
Perfect. Right?
And the game was not yet poisoned to the extent where... now, the Swedes won a silver medal at the last Olympics in Rio, right? They've been a brilliant team as long as women's football has existed. But it's still not to the extent that... the whole thing is gerrymandered. Like, Ireland could still beat them 1-0 with a Louise Quinn header. Like, that's not beyond the bounds of possibility. Whereas if Ireland were to play, you know, Italy or Germany or whoever now, you just know what's going to happen there because the difference that money has made to football in those places. And that's the thing that got me this week about the Champions League semi-final, Sean, is that who's in it? The teams with the most money in Europe are there. Who's going to win the Premier League? The team with the most money. And last year was the same thing. When Liverpool finally spent money, Liverpool finally won a title. And the idea then somehow, to move the discussion on just a little bit, right? We talk about Pep Guardiola and we talk about Jurgen Klopp and we talk about Solskjaer and we talk about Nagelsmann and all these people, right? But the one thing they all have in common is they have shed loads of money to buy the best players for. Mm-hmm. So, you know, has it come to the stage now where, you know, Gary Neville seems to have missed the point entirely, you know, that the reason Man United aren't winning trophies is because they spent a lot of money on Harry Maguire that he wasn't worth, whereas Liverpool spent a lot of money on Virgil van Dijk and he was worth it. And we've seen that this season, you know, so when you look at that as a fan, because as I say, your Twitter feed when Manchester United are playing, I don't watch the game, I just follow you. Like, it's just hilarious to see how annoyed you get about it, especially with the players. But is that where we're at now? You know, do you sort of ignore the sort of the tactical aspect of it, you know, the youth setup and that kind of thing? Just go, look, get me a £200 million striker who's going to score 50 goals a year.
No, but I think because that's maybe a unique thing to Man United fans, because Man United have been brought up with both of those things, I think. Like, Man United had the Beckhams and the Scholes and the Giggses and all coming through, but we also bought, you know, Cantona, bought Varane, bought whoever else it might be all the way. So I think as a Man United fan, and, you know, you could say all teams do that, but I think Man United have really done that. You know, they've based their teams on kind of the youth setup. And, like, I was tweeting there, trolling Liverpool fans, as I like to do, a couple of months ago, when they had, you know, two injuries and said the whole league was against them because two people got injured. And they were like, oh, they couldn't believe they had to bring a youth player into their team. They were giving out about it. I feel like as Man United fans, and me especially, all of my friends are Man United fans, when Mason Greenwood gets a chance, we absolutely love it. When, I know I'm mad we bought him in, but when a young player, when he gets a chance, we absolutely love it. Shola Shoratire, when he got a chance, I love that. But I also want to see, you know, I'd love us to sign Mbappe. I want us to sign, like, there's reality of it as well. Man United at the moment, we need a centre-back badly. Your boy Victor Lindelof hasn't been great. Although he's been a little bit better again this season, I think. I think he needs replacing.
Won't hear a word said against him. Lovely man.
I'm sure he is. But I think he needs replacing. Obviously, it looks like Cavani's staying on for another year now, but I think Man United need another striker. And if Harry Kane was available, obviously go out and get him. But like, I feel like all Man United fans, I think some Man United fans would rather a Kane or even Ronaldo. There's rumours of that. Almost before Haaland, because I think we believe in Greenwood. And we think a couple of years with a really experienced striker, maybe Greenwood at the age of 24, 25, that's a couple more years online, will be ready to take that. Mm. And I like that. I you know, as a Man United fan, and I think that's what we've been built on throughout the last 20 years or so. But I do want Man United to spend more. The problem is, with Man United as well, right, is when Liverpool spent money, right, they got these new owners, and okay, they sold Coutinho, was it, and they spent that money, in fairness. But with Man City, and Man City have made a beautiful team. I was talking to my friends the other day, and I hate Man City because I like them so much. You know, I Ruben Diaz, one of the best defenders coming into the Premier League I've seen in years. Phil Foden, I think, is going to be the best player in the world in a couple of years. I love Bernardo Silva. I think he's one of the best players in the world, one of the most underrated players in the world. But they've all, you know, it's all been backed by money, by, you know, we know where it's coming from. With Man United, there's always been a feeling with Man United that they've done it the right way. You know, they have earned their money by being a brilliant club on the field and by being a brilliant club off the field. With, you know, there's nothing wrong with, you know, going to Asia and selling your product there, going to America, selling I don't see anything wrong with that. I'm in Ireland, like, I'm not in Manchester, like, I consume the product as well. I don't see anything wrong with that. And I feel like that's the right way through it rather than just money coming in, which I would actually kind of love now as well, because the Glazers have come in and absolutely destroyed the club and taken that money out that Man United have kind of rightfully earned and robbed it from themselves. So, like, when Man United spend money, I don't feel as bad about it. And I'm not coming out calling it financial doping like when Liverpool do it. I don't think it's as bad for Man United. Maybe that's me being extremely biased, but however.
It was interesting there how they sort of changed a little bit, because if you go back to the 50s and the Busby Babes and all, and at that stage, like, Celtic won the first British club to win the European Cup, and everybody grew up within 10 miles of the ground kind of thing, you know. Mm-hmm. So, but that was a time when that happened in Portuguese clubs and in Spanish clubs and that. But then, you know, even when United's sort of first period of greatness in your lifetime, it was, you know, the Neville's, Scholes, Beckham, but then they also bought Roy Keane for £3.75 million. So money was still there then. Cantona wasn't a huge, I think he was only 1.5 million or something from Leeds. So it wasn't huge money, but they certainly sort of stole him as well, you know, and they got in Peter Schmeichel from Bromby and this kind of thing. But to move the goalpost just a little bit, right, because what was bothering me all week, one was two things. One you mentioned was Mason Greenwood there, and I was training with an Estonian black belt this year. This guy's been doing Brazilian jiu-jitsu for 21 years, right, and it takes time to learn any sport properly, right? So when you see Greenwood coming up and Marcus Rashford coming up, they're not the finished product, you know. They need to learn the game and for that the time to sort of slow down a little bit. But then on the other side of the coin, we see Jake Paul going into professional boxing. He's had three fights, and he's made more money than most boxers and definitely most MMA fighters will in their lifetime. How do you view that? Because I don't know, did you even watch that fight when he took on Ben Askren? Yeah, I did.
I watched that fight. The bout, I wouldn't call it a fight.
You're shameless altogether, aren't you?
I am. I don't give a shit. Look, the thing about Jake Paul is people are viewing this in, I think, the wrong way. This is not a sports person just happening to get all this money. This is a celebrity going into that sport and getting paid an awful lot to do it. You know, we've seen this in MMA before. We've seen it with, you know, CM Punk and stuff like that. The difference with MMA and boxing and combat sports is you can get paid for one night or two nights or three nights, and you can get a huge amount of money, and you don't need to be skilled enough to be the best in the world at it or to be good enough to earn your spot. I'll give you an example, right? Brock Lesnar, a great athlete, but he was an entertainer, and his name got him to a lot of different places. He went to try out for the NFL, and I think it was the Vikings he went to try out for. And he went and he did, you know, because he's such a good athlete, I think he did pretty well, almost, you know, got on a squad and then was let go, didn't make it. And we saw what he did in MMA, he became a champion, so he's obviously very good at that. But that's the difference, I think, between combat sports and other sports, real sports, team sports. you can get there in combat sports based on who you are and your matchmaking. When it's one-on-one, it's very different. Like Brock Lesnar can't go out against, you know, the Dallas Cowboys and come up against some schlub. You know, he's going to be playing the best NFL players in the world. So if you're on his team and you're his coach, you're like saying, what am I doing? This guy is just completely letting us down. Where if you're Jake Paul, you can go in against a guy who had a hip replacement 4 months ago, is 30 pounds overweight and was never a boxer in the first place. You know, that's what you could do. And people will eat it up because you're a celebrity with 100 million YouTube subscribers, and people will come over from your YouTube because they know you, they like you, or they hate you, and they will watch you because of that. You already have that inbuilt following. You know, when I started Severe Man Podcast, right, if I had started it from nothing, we would have had maybe a few subscribers and maybe it would have grown. We had the Severe MMA website that had been around for a long time. We've been covering Irish MMA. We started the Severe MMA podcast and immediately all the Severe MMA fans subscribed to it because we had that built up beforehand. We had people knew us, people knew where we were coming from. Graham and Andrew and all the lads had done great work, and we came and we brought that audience immediately with us. At a obviously a very much smaller level, Jake Paul has done the same thing. He has his YouTube audience. He's gone into another world, and he has, he's really, you can say what you want about Jake Paul, but he's intelligent in a lot of ways. He might be very stupid in other ways, but he realized he could translate that audience into one night of work and get a lot of money out of it. And in fairness, it's not just one night of work either, because he has, you know, he has prepared and done different things, but like, there's a difference between, right, professional in combat sports and professional in other sports. Because as I said there, that matchmaking I just talked about, or him fighting a basketball player, you can have a professional fight against him. You could probably have like a professional tennis match against him as well, right? But it's not going to be on a tour. You know, it's not going to be with other professional tennis matches or with, or you know, if you couldn't join the Premier League. It's like things are not happening like that. There is an entry into combat sports that's not there for other people. And the reason for that, money, obviously. Combat sports is, it's entertainment, it's sport, and it's money. It's prize fighting. And people can deny that if they want. There is a meritocracy to MMA and to boxing, you know, like any other sport, but there's also a side of it that has nothing got to do with meritocracy, and we usually see it. The problem with Jake Paul is we usually only see this with the very, very top. So Floyd Mayweather, if he fights, right, and they'll take out the Logan Paul side of it for a second, if he fights the fourth best welterweight in the world, whoever it might be, and we watch that, nobody cares what belts are on the line. If Conor McGregor fights Nate Diaz, the second and third biggest selling fights of all time in the UFC, there were no belts on the line. Nobody cares. So it's once you get to that high level that people no longer really care about meritocracy. They care about the name. They care about who they want to watch. Maybe they care about the entertainment. That's a fact. That's just the way it does it. Jake Paul, he brought that level of notoriety that you usually get with being a top fighter, and he brought it down to the bottom level of fighting, and has still got the same reward. Maybe not as big, but he's done it really well. And look, do I like it? Not really. I don't really care. I'm not that offended by it, but you can't not understand it. If you understand it, you're just burying your head in the sand. Like I think Daniel Cormier and some other people have done and kind of buried their head in the sand about it. It's like, I don't see the point in it. I think it's similar with the whole Super League thing. And it's just the way it is. But in combat sports, like, we can, I think in soccer and with Gary Neville and all those thousands of fans coming out, in soccer, sometimes we can willfully ignore the money, even though it's completely right in front of us. And we see it all the time. Man United spent fucking 80 million on Harry Maguire. But you can't in combat sports. You absolutely can't. It's part of it. We see it all the time. We see negotiations before fight. We see John Jones talking about, Conor McGregor talking about, Jake Paul talking about. It always has been. So I think that's the differential between two of them. But make no mistake about it, there's money all over sports, but the difference is it doesn't necessarily need to be the highest of the high level in combat sports. A little bit like Arsenal, I suppose, getting into the Super League.
Actually, there was one of those things that you said. You started on the same Severe MMA podcast channel on Patreon, you started doing this on the news headlines this week, And in one of them, you were talking about journalism, but you were also talking about things like this, about the Super League and that. And you've realized that you're kind of no longer the target audience for, you know, for Jake Paul boxing or for the Super League. Like you said it there a little bit earlier, that you're just a little bit older probably than what the target audience for the Super League is. What led you to that realization, John?
Do you know what led me to that realization as well? I listened to a lot of Dave Meltzer, and he's a fantastic podcast, and he knows all about it. You know, a lot of things come from the wrestling business, and the way he speaks about like television audiences and stuff like that. But like, I think, look, my generation, I'm the very last generation that grew up to the age of maybe 10 without a computer, you know, without even a computer in school. I remember the first day, like, we got computers in school. Maybe I was a little bit younger than 10, but like, I had no computer in my house. I remember when I was going into secondary school, the principal told my mother, oh, geez, you want a computer now? And that was at the age, 12 years old. So my childhood coming up, I had no computers, and it was, you know, it was television. If there was something on television, we'd watch it. And it's like younger people, I was talking about my niece earlier, my nephew, they don't really watch anything on television. Everything they watch is, you know, Netflix or YouTube or whatever else it might be. So I think that's why, and there's two sides to that. The point I was making, I think, on that podcast was, in future, that is the audience. And at, you know, now and in future, the present and in the future, that's the audience you have to target. And that's why I think people are changing things and moving things around. You know, there was talks with the Super League before about making shorter halves or making it into quarters because people don't have the attention span, you know, it's a TikTok world and everything like that. But I still think, say, my generation now, from say 30 to whatever it might be, there's still a good couple of decades at least left in the TV watching audience. And I feel like sometimes it feels like they're trying to move past it too quickly. We saw it with the UFC even signing with 11 Sports there a while back. And like, you know, they can't get on a TV platform, and like, well, let's kind of back out of this at the moment. And some sports are doing that as well. There was lots of talk of Amazon and Netflix. And I know there was a bid on Amazon, and I know that the tennis has signed up to, I think it's Amazon as well and stuff. But there hasn't been as much of it, I think, as we would have expected in 2021. Now, I think by the time 2025 comes around, it might be a little bit different. So I think people kind of have half realized that, but want to move on, because I feel like they, in this business, in the TV business, it's about being first, as we see, like we see with the UFC bringing out their app and getting the Fight Pass, and with the WWE getting the WWE Network. And then I think, you know, WWE, okay, it's not sports, but they're always in front of everyone else with things like this, with the business side of it. And what they did very intelligently, and I think it's what the Super League should have done, was they owned all their rights. They had all the WrestleManias for all the years, all the SummerSlams, all the Raws, all the SmackDowns, and they have it on this one app. And then they sold it there, 6 months ago or something like that, to another app. And now it's on another app over in America. And they sold it for an absolutely astronomical fee, right? And that is the future, I think. The Premier League or whoever it might be need to own all their footage and have all those back matches and all the matches coming up in one slick package to all go online. Like, imagine if the Super League got it right. They started online. They did it all online. There was no BT Sports, no Sky Sports. And they had this 5 years of their online package proving how much money it can earn. Mm-hmm. Imagine how much Netflix would buy that for, or how much Amazon would buy that for. These people absolutely dying for content and live content as well. Mm-hmm. I think that's the future. But at the moment, my point on me, my generation, and them not targeting me, I still think TV is there for the moment. And I still think it has a bit left in it, but we're at a very interesting precipice, I think, because we are moving from my generation to the generation that all they know is computers. And, you know, it's the 18 to 49 that they are targeting, and those people from 18 to say 32 are taking over. You know, it's going to be 18 to 35 soon, it's going to be 18 to 40 soon, who know nothing but computers. And that's a very, very interesting topic, I think, and a very interesting time we have ahead of us to see where this whole business goes in sports.
somebody I know who works in the media business in New York was telling me that they weren't surprised at all by what happened with the Super League, and they weren't surprised. They don't describe it as being cancelled, right? And this is not a soccer fan. This is just somebody who works with media rights. And they said, this is not over, right? This is coming. It's just that, you know, now it's been put off a little bit. They misread the room. At the moment, because of the pandemic, there's an awful lot of things have changed, and people reacted an awful lot more strongly than what they might have done if they were still going to matches, right? But that person was saying that all the talk about the Super League was to do with a TV deal. And this person does not believe for one second that there was ever a plan to have it on TV. They believe that they were going to go to one of the two big players that they mentioned. They didn't say that either of these was involved now, but they suggested that either Google or Amazon was the target, right? And that it would be the first global deal where there was a single price globally. So it doesn't matter if you're watching in a poor African or Asian country, or if you're watching in a wealthy European country like Ireland or Sweden, they were just going to go, right, it's going to cost X. You want to watch this, it's going to cost X. Just fucking pay it. And by that, in doing that, they would cut out so many middlemen, so many operators, so many deal brokers, so many agents, so many broadcasters, and they would retain the right together with the platform to put in whatever advertising they want. And that, Sean, is astronomical money that you're talking about. And this is one of the things that we've seen in the UFC, because I mean, you've been covering the sport of mixed martial arts for a long time, right? You were around when the UFC said to people, right, we're going to have one kit supplier, so you're not going to be able to wear Nike or Under Armour, you're going to have to wear first Reebok, and now it's Venom. If can you just go back to that for the listeners and just describe how that was that a shock to people at the time, and why, and what effect did it have on the fighters?
So the whole point of that, and a lot of things the UFC did at the time, was, guess why? What's the theme of this podcast?
Money!
They wanted to sell up, and they did end up selling up. And now yesterday, they sold Endeavor, which was, what is it, WMEIMG at the time, and they were put on the stock exchange. I don't know how that stuff works at all, though, but that's the reason they did it. And that's the top and bottom of it. So they introduced drug testing into the sport. They brought in this, but the UFC, one of the UFC's major selling points is low wages. And that is... as someone who loves the sport and who watches these fighters all the time and has great admiration for them, the fact that them being badly paid is a selling point for the UFC, it just sticks in my craw. And I'm the sort of person who doesn't give a shit really about money and stuff, as we've seen from the rest of this podcast. But like MMA, just because it's a little bit closer to me and stuff, but that to me is very annoying. And with the kit deal, the point you're making there is UFC fighters down through the years, and still some fighters outside of the UFC, were able to, like, you go into a t-shirt, and I'm, you know, a severe MMA podcast, I say to fighter A, right, here, come on, do you know what, I'm going to sponsor you for this, I'll give you £500, put my logo, that swears it up there, throw that on the back of your t-shirt, as you walk down, they'll see you whipping off the t-shirt, I get some advertising, job done, you know, and maybe our man in Stockholm gives him another £500, you know, maybe Michael Jordan gives him another £500, and you know, maybe they have six or seven of them on it, they earn an extra £5,000 or something like that. And if you're Conor McGregor, maybe you earn an extra £1 million. Yeah. And if you're, you know, Chris Cyborg, maybe you earn 500,000. If you're, you know, Masvidal, you might earn £90,000 or something like that. And it was extra money for these people. What the UFC did was, this looks dirty, this doesn't look professional, we need to be like Man United, we need to have our white shorts, we need to have our red top. Paul Pogba, you wouldn't see Paul Pogba going in with, you know, the Severe Met podcast list across them, you know, do a Man United match.
Given some of the things you've said about him over the years, that's not
I wouldn't blame him, in fairness. But that's exactly what they did. So they, for the sake of making their sport look cleaner so that they would have a better chance of selling it, the UFC did that. They took away the ability for those fighters to earn a little bit extra money while also paying them really badly and keeping their pay. Like the UFC, I think they've done it twice now. They have announced increases in pay, right? So they go, I think they went first of all from 8-8 to start off. So if I'm signed to the UFC today, and my first contract would be, if I show up and I make weight and I go in and I enter that fight and I throw one punch, I get £8,000, right? If I win that fight, I get another £8,000. So I get 16. Then it was changed from 10 and 10. You 10 to show, 20 if you win. And now I think I think there was talks there a couple of weeks ago of increasing it from 12 to 12 and 12. That, imagine that, £24,000 to go in there and put your life on the line on the UFC, and when we've talked about all the money they're making from TV deals and from their app and everything like that, with people signing up, it's actually, it's crazy when you think about it, the way that, how badly they're paying people. And look, you could say, okay, those people haven't earned their money yet. They haven't, they haven't made their name yet. Those people have earned their way there by being good enough to be signed to the UFC. Okay, I'm not saying go in and pay fighter, the first fighter in the card $1 million, but once they get there, pay them that. The problem is when they get there, they're not getting paid that still. you have to be a Conor McGregor, you have to be a John Jones to earn this astronomical money. Even some champions are not earning that. So that to me is the problem with the UFC. And one thing as well, when they were doing the sale and when they went on the stock market yesterday, Ari Emanuel, who people might know, Ari Gold from Entourage, he's based on him. He is the owner, the CEO, whatever you want to call him, of Endeavor. And he did an interview yesterday. And one thing that really, really offends me recently is Dana White and him have this line, and they always say, there's never been a death or a serious injury in the UFC. And I'm like, did they not see Chris Weidman at the weekend and he snapped his leg in half?
Yep.
No. Or did they not read that story that Stephen Rocco did brilliantly about Spencer Fisher a couple of months back now at this stage, where his whole life has changed because of the suspected CTE he has and the brain injuries he has, where his memory is absolutely shot and he can't do normal things with his family, and he does bits of training with people and teaches them stuff, but his memory, like, is that not a serious injury? Is that, like, to me, that is as serious an injury as you can get. So that the UFC, they use these things, they say these things an awful lot to earn more money, and they are very outwardly about it, and they're not shy in saying it at all, and they're not shy in doing things like, as you mentioned there, with the kit deal, taking money out of the UFC fighters' pockets and giving them nothing back. You know, after a while with the deal, they started putting little monster logos on the fighter shorts, and they put other certain things on it as well. And they have logos blasted all over the cage during the whole fight. They never stopped doing that. So, like, they never had a clean cage for any of those fights. So, look, the UFC, they are one of the worst organizations, I suppose, for absolutely robbing their fighters blind and earning loads of money themselves. So, yeah, there's no sanctity in MMA anyway, in all the sports, I suppose.
Even when Conor McGregor fought Floyd Mayweather, because of the contract that he has with the UFC, I don't know, have you ever seen a fighter contract with the UFC? I'm sure you've seen one, have you?
There was one going around, all right, before. I think John Nash over in Bloody Elbow does fantastic work, and he's a podcast called Show Money as well. So if anyone, it's very complicated now to talk about it here, but he does a great job of it. And there was a very interesting one that came out before. I think it was Rampage Jackson's contract when talking about pay-per-views and the amount of money they get for it. So these figures are wrong now, but it's like this. So, like, from no buys to 200,000 buys, if you have a pay-per-view deal, and if you have a good pay-per-view deal, you get like 75 cent from each buy or something like that, and it costs like 70 quid. If it's above that, you get 250 from 500,000 to 700,000. If it's above 700,000, you get a five or something like that. Not, I don't think it's that much, but that's the sort of way the UFC work it. So basically, the UFC are only paying you if you bring them in huge money, and they can afford to give you a tiny slice of it. But
like the crumbs for the table. But when Conor was boxing Mayweather, he had to share the money that he got with the UFC just to be freed from his contract for that one night to fight, you know. And I remember saying to somebody afterwards, there was loads of journalists turned up there, and we were in the tent afterwards, in the media tent afterwards, and journalists turned up, and there was actually journalists there who were wondering, why didn't Conor McGregor win? Why didn't Conor McGregor win? I remember one of them asked me that question. So, why didn't Conor win that? He's a much younger man, that kind of thing. So it's very hard to fight when another man has his hand in your pocket, you know? And the guy didn't get the joke at all, unfortunately. But, and Conor as well, for a man who's made so much money in that, it doesn't make to me a whole lot of business sense. For a while there, he was not just the biggest athlete in the UFC, he was the biggest athlete in the world. for a while there, around 2016, 2017, around the Nate Diaz fights and when he beat Eddie Alvarez, the night he sat up in the cage at the start of November 2016. Like, he was the biggest athlete in the world at that point. And, you know, for all the money that he's made, you have to ask yourself, you know, if he couldn't have made more money if he had had the freedom to do so, which he didn't really have. But to round off the discussion, Sean, I was born in 1971. I remember seeing the first World Cup that I saw was 10 years before you were born, 1978 in Argentina. Mm-hmm. You were born the same year as Ray Houghton put the ball in the English net. You grew up with Alan Shearer. You grew up knowing nothing other than Manchester United success. Mm-hmm. The WWF, WWE, the UFC was started shortly after you were born. Where do you see sport and your own love of it going from here? Because I know you're a huge lover of the Limerick hurling team as well. Mm-hmm. In 10 years' time, what sport do you think you're going to be watching? Where will you be watching it? And why will you be watching it?
I think I'll be watching everything still, to be honest, because I can understand why people fall out of love with sport, because they kind of get caught up with what's outside of it. And with me, look, all those other sports, I love them, but I'm embedded in MMA. You know, every day of my life is, you know, talking to you about MMA, or talking to my own podcast, recording a podcast, or interviewing someone about MMA. And with MMA, you know, as we've discussed there, the vast majority of people in MMA are lovely people. The fans especially, yeah. I think a lot of them are fantastic, but there's some horrible people in MMA and some horrible stuff being done. And it makes you hate the sport sometimes. Like, there was a period I went through late last year where I didn't want to do it anymore. I just didn't want to cover this sport anymore. And March or April last year, when the whole COVID stuff started, and I think myself and a lot of people were calling for the UFC to, look, lads, park this for a couple of months. Let's see what we need to do in terms of, can we, you know, there's a period last year, we all know, should we be wearing masks? Should we not be wearing masks? Yeah. Should we be going out? Can we go outdoors? Can we go indoors? Can we have 10 people in the room? Can we have 100 people in the room? And we found ways around that. The Premier League came back, all different sports came back. And look, all the sports that have come back have done it like very safely, right? Mm-hmm. So I think a lot of me and a lot of people included were calling for the UFC to just wait. We're not saying intra-business. We're not saying wait for the coronavirus to go away in 2025 and come back. You know, we're saying wait, give it a chance, find the proper protocols, and let's do it. And the UFC at the start were saying, fuck that. We are going to an Indian resort in America. We're going to, you know, we're going to fly all over the world. We're going to do this card wherever we can do it. And look, that Disney came in. They told them not to do that. But when that happened, there was absolute the abuse. I've never seen it like that before. And all we wanted at that stage, me and other people, was for us to step back, keep people safe for a while, and then bring the UFC back. Mm-hmm. We didn't want to, for me personally, maybe everyone wasn't like this, but I wanted to do was to kind of to see where it laid with the whole coronavirus. And that, to me, kind of it made me want to not talk about MMA anymore. It made me want to not cover it anymore. Look, that kind of pass. And do you know what makes a pass? And it's a long-winded way, I suppose, of answering your question, but what made that pass, and what made the way I was feeling towards the end of the year pass, and I think towards the end of the year was because it was 26 events in a row. So yeah, 6 months, and I was just drained from it. And yeah, that was passive. But what makes a pass is great fights. You know, at the end of the year, Davidson Figueiredo fought Brandon Moreno. It was a fantastic fight. And I thought it was a bit of a robbery in the judging card, right? And I'm not used to saying that. And I love talking about judging and stuff like that. And that close fight, talking about judging, it made me think about nothing else but the fight. And the judging of the fight and the technique of the fight. And that's what I love. That's what I absolutely love. You know, you call me a fan and a journalist at the start. I would not call myself a journalist, and I would be more than happy with people to call me a fan. And it's some people covering MMA, they hate when people call them fans. I'm a fan of soccer. I'm a fan of MMA. I don't give a shit. So I that's why I love it. I love the sport itself. And I feel like some people, and even some people covering the sport, they would rather talk about, you know, Floyd Mayweather fighting Logan Paul and the YouTube videos coming up to that rather than the bout itself or whatever else it might be. So for me, where will I be in 10 years? I'll be watching those sports. I'll be watching Limerick win their 15th All-Ireland in a row. I'll still be watching Man United. There's nothing I love more than seeing someone like Wonderboy, I was a big fan of him. Seeing him coming through, or seeing the likes of James Gallagher, I watched him as an amateur coming through, and he's on the verge of, say, a Bellator title now. Or seeing Mason Greenwood and hear about him coming through and saying, oh, this young lad, he's scoring, you know, 25 goals in 24 games in the reserves. Is he going to get a game? And then he gets a game and he looks brilliant. And he looks like to me, watching Mason Greenwood last night, I know you didn't see the game, but he scored a goal. And it was a lovely ball played through by Cavani. He got it on the right wing. He came in and he turned from a left-footed player to a right-footed player and kicked the ball with his right foot and scored, right? And it took a deflection off the defender. The goalie almost saved it, but it went in the top corner. So you could look at that and say it's a scruffy enough goal. But if you look at it, and before he even kicks the ball, the way he adjusts from being a South Bar to an Orthodox, you know, I saw that, and that movement, that's the sort of thing I'm like, God almighty, there aren't many athletes ever that can do that so effortlessly. Someone like a David Clifford playing for Kerry, kick off his left, kick off his right, or Gooch. People like them, I love watching people like them, like athletes. Like, I have a LeBron James top on here. I have no interest in the Miami Heat. Like, watching him, I absolutely love it. That's the sort of thing that I think, if I lose the love for that, I'll give it all up and I won't watch sports anymore. But that's the reason I watch sports. That's the reason I continue to watch sports. And that's the reason I love watching sports. And like, it just so happens, my one love, if Limerick were rubbish, and they have been for a long time, don't get me wrong, I would still watch them and still support them and still be devastated when they lost and, you know, joyous when they won. But it just so happens we have like the most beautiful Ireland team that's ever happened. Thanks to JP McManus's money. That I've nothing that's ever made me as happy as that, to be honest. It's I waited my whole life. My mother and father got married in 1973, and they missed the match because of their honeymoon, and that was the last time that Limerick won the All Ireland. Then they won it again in 2018, and I remember talking to one of my friends Christmas afterwards, when we used to be able to go to pubs at that time, and he said to me, I had agreed with myself that we'd never win it. You know, I had agreed that we would never win the All-Ireland. And I kind of said to me too, you know, I remember back at Bebo on the day, I had this thing up. If we win the All-Ireland, I'm going to do this and this and this and this. and then I didn't do half of it. But anyway, that's the stuff like you live for. If I know that my friend, you know, Ariel Helwani over in America, he loves the Knicks. And he's like, oh, I want to see him win. I want to see him win the championship. And I can feel like that. And if you're, you know, a baseball fan, or if you're a soccer fan or whatever, and you want to see your team win, or you want to see something happen, like, waiting for that and, you know, preparing for it and then it happening, that's the sort of thing that we can still have in sport. And we can talk about the money and we can talk about everything, you know, that goes on in sport, but we can still, when the game starts, we can ignore it for a little minute and look, let ourselves ignore it and watch the game and support our team. And then when we do it, when we get to the very top, we can enjoy it. And that's what will keep me going.
There are still moments of beauty that money can't buy. Sean Sheehan, thanks very much for taking part. I shall talk to you very soon, and I shall talk to you all next week. Have a great week, wherever you may be.